our scouts do a tremendous job. You know, I challenge anyone to sit out there and do what they do and watch them work, and you tell me their heart and soul is not in this organization and trying to make us win. I'm walking down and he turns around and he is MFing me. It's no different than sitting down with you guys, you know. Right, it's the first time's a little nerve wracking, you know, getting used to mink, you know.
Right. We gotta get used to the smell first. Right. Welcome into the lounge. You know what's right around the corner, Garrett? You pack up your bags, head into the frozen tundra of Indianapolis.
The frozen tundra of
Indy. NFL scouting combine. It's not supposed to be that cold this year.
It's not. There's been a couple years where I've been there, and I remember it was like first or second year there, and the temperature on my phone was -2. So that was the kind of set the threshold. But this year, I've looked at the forecast, I think in 40s, maybe some days in the 50s.
You might be wearing a bathing suit around.
I might.
By comparison,
I might have to get like a Hawaiian shirt to get ready for the combine. Go watch the practices.
Anyway, good stuff with the combine coming up. A lot of news. You're going to be bringing us a lot of updates, videos, media interviews. Of course, all your thoughts from all that stuff. It's going to be a busy week for you.
It is going to be. What are you going to be doing?
Nothing.
I know that. That's the problem.
I'm going to be wearing my Hawaiian shirt back here, living the high life.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, I'm sure you are.
You know, we'll see. But with that in mind, we decided to bring on Director of College Scouting, Joe Ortiz, to kind of preview this thing. So let's welcome in Joe for the conversation.
All right, Joe. Well, thanks for joining us today. We decided to do the interview with you here before the combine so that you didn't come up with a fake excuse again like you did last year that you were sick and then put us all for 3 different days and then tell us you can't do it. And then we got to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to actually go ahead and do it. We just wanted to keep it limited, simple.
Easier to get me here.
Yeah, I know where your office is.
You know, I truly was sick last year. I had the yep. flu. I missed 3 interviews last year at the combine because they actually start giving us guys to interview on Tuesday night.
3 of the 60?
Yeah, I missed 3 of the 60. It was Kamara. Wow.
Kamara!
Yeah, I missed Kamara's
you
interview.
You could have had him!
And McCaffrey, and then Dorian Johnson from Pittsburgh. Those three guys we interviewed on Tuesday night, and I was laid up in the hotel room with a flu.
So he gets sick, and then he pushes off the interview. We got to find a time to do it. Then one morning, I wake up at like 4:30 in the morning to go to the bathroom or whatever. I look at my phone. He's texting me at 4 o'clock in the morning saying, can we do it now? Can we do it? Yeah, because we're all up and ready to go right now.
Come on, Garrett. Yeah. What's the matter with you?
We did get it done early. It was still dark outside.
Yeah, it was early. Way,
but it was good.
So before we start this interview, I want to ask you, how much of what you're about to tell us is going to be true, and how much is complete baloney?
Probably all of it.
The latter?
Yeah, it's all true. It's all baloney. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I tried to be somewhat truthful with you guys, especially when you ask me about the process. You know, that's all true. You know,
right. Yeah.
Players, there may be a few lies mixed in.
We appreciate it. Yeah. All right. Now that that's out of the way, what part of the process are you in right now? And what do you, where do you stand right now heading into the combine?
Yeah, so we just got done last Saturday. We finished up our second true round of meetings. We talked to the guys in October, go over their top 15 players, and then we bring them all in December. I think David talked to you a little bit about that during mm-hmm. his podcast with you guys. But they come in, go over their top 30 players, 20 to 30 players, and we kind of set the board, the framework of the board then. But this is really, all right, all the work's been done on all the players, the fall looks, the cross checks, the all-star game. So we really, and we've gotten at least one, probably two looks on, at least two looks on every junior. So we're able to really put a board together, a pretty confident, a board we feel pretty confident in. And so that's where we're at. We got done that last Saturday, and now I'm divvying up the responsibilities, the interviews for the coaches, their individual interviews, and then the players we're going to be bringing into the big room at Indy for the 60 formal interviews. So I just got done sending that out right before I came down here.
So when you go to the combine next week, what do you feel like is the most useful part? Is it the interviews? Is it the on-field workouts? Like, what is it that you get the most out of?
You know, I think to each player, there's a different level of importance to each aspect of the combine. You know, some guys, it's as simple as height and weight. You know, if you're looking at an offensive lineman that's light and that's been light, you want to see if he's added some mass. So if he shows up at a guy who's been weighing 280 during the year and he shows up at 300, you're like, okay, right. he's growing the right way. Right. Likewise, if you got a guy who's 300 and all of a sudden he's 285, you're like, I hope to God he's had the flu or something. Right.
So, but there's also those college media guys, they tend to fudge the numbers in those a little bit.
Oh, there's no doubt. And even like, I mean, we go onto campus and they'll say, oh yeah, he's weighing 315 right now. And then you get to the Senior Bowl and he's 298. And, you know, so something's not adding up.
Yeah.
Right. So, so the weigh-ins are important. Some guys you want to speak to. You haven't had a chance to talk to. With all the All-Star games going, we get a chance. Our scouts get to do a great job interviewing guys and get a chance to get a feel for them. But then, obviously, the field workouts are important. It gives you a chance. It's a level playing field. Everyone's doing the same thing, wearing the same gear, and gives you a chance to see who the athletic movers are, and obviously the timing and testing is important, but really the field drills is where you're really going to see how a guy is able to move and control his body.
Right. You talked a little bit about the interviews. What gets a guy on the Ravens interview list? Is it mostly that you want to talk to your top 50 guys to really get kind of burrow down on them, or is it that you have burning questions for guys that may have some issues off the field or whatnot?
Yeah, it's a mix. You know, I think a lot of juniors end up on our list because it's our first chance. Very few juniors go to any All-Star game. Senior
right.
Bowl started to invite juniors who have graduated, so we're able to talk to a couple of them there. But for the most part, we have not been exposed to a lot of the juniors. So our interview list is typically junior heavy, and then there'll be a mix, guys that maybe at the top of our board, at the middle of our board, maybe some of the guys are in the latter rounds who we just haven't had a chance to talk to, or we have a question, a concern, want to get clarity on a specific topic that we'll bring in and spend some time with them.
Do you find that guys, players, when you grill them on some of that less unsavory stuff or more unsavory stuff, how honest do you feel like they generally are? Like, do you feel the prospects come in and lay it out on the table, or are they trying to hide stuff?
Some guy, it just depends on the person. You know, some guys come in there and are completely honest and upfront about everything, and will go in. There's times you have to like speed them up. Like, they're going so into so much detail about the incidents or their situations they were in. And there's other guys that'll kind of glance over it. And,
right.
you know, and all guys are different. You know, some guys are telling the story for the 18th time.
Right.
It's really easy for them. Some guys, you get in there and are interviewing for the very, we are their first interview of the entire combine, of the entire process. So regardless if they have an issue or not, they're just not as comfortable sitting in front
right.
of us as the first time as they are the 15th time. It's no different than sitting down with you guys. You
right.
know, it's
right.
the first time's a little nerve-wracking, you know, getting used to mink, you know.
Right, and, you know. No, never know what's coming.
We got to get used to the smell first.
Right, right. So, but once you get going and comfortable, it's certainly, you can tell the guys that, we're their last interview of the combine.
Right.
They're at ease and relaxed and have been through it before.
Along those lines, obviously you're not going to name names. You can if you want, but what's the worst combine interview you've ever had?
Can you describe it?
Yeah, describe it.
God, we've had so many different ones.
The total dud.
Well, we've had a guy who literally discussed having multiple personalities. We knew he had multiple personalities that he liked to go into at the university, and we had this player in, and we addressed it with him, and he looked at us stone-faced and said, I'm doing it right now. And, like, he's in a different personality. And so, like, you're just taken aback. And I remember, like, you know, I'm not going to name names of guys in the room, but I know one guy got up on the front of his chair, like, you know, all right, let's do this, you know. He was ready to, you know, defend himself. And then we had another guy inching towards the door, you know, like, I'm getting the heck out of here. So, you know, he was definitely, I remember walking out of that one just being like, oh my God, walked out shaking my head, you know. So, he was probably one, the most entertaining and fun story to tell, but also the just, wow, that was just mind-boggling.
I can imagine.
You know, so. Do you have any question that you hit him with that, like, instantly gets them out, like, on their toes, you know? Like, we've just heard these reports of, you know, oddball questions that somebody
asks.
Yeah,
you know, we've changed our process through the interviews over the year. It used to be just ask them about their families and, our scouts do such a great job of getting background and talking to so many sources, it becomes redundant information. So what we've tried to do is get them into football more, you know.
Okay.
So we really don't ask them a ton of, like, curveball questions.
Mm-hmm.
If we have something specific we want to hit them on, we're hitting them on, but they're also probably anticipating that because they know it, they have it in their background.
Right.
But we really don't. We've tried to get away from the, you know, what's the seventh month of the year, you know, and, you know, things of that, you know, and we'll ask it every once in a while, you know.
If, like, they're in autopilot mode.
Exactly.
Or something,
yeah, that, right. If you sense that the guy's just, like, completely rehearsed, and you'll try to get him out of it, you
right.
know. A good one is when a guy's rehearsed, hey, what room are you in right now?
Like, who are you talking to?
What team
to?
Are you talking to? Like, that's what, but the funny thing is, most guys know they're talking to the Ravens.
Right.
But when they get asked the question, they're like, oh, crap, am I, they're staring right at Ozzy or John.
Yeah.
It's like, they're looking right at him. I'm like, and they're like, this is the Ravens. But then they want to look at their tag. Yeah, the Ravens. You know? So they're a little bit, that one will get them thrown off because they're like, why are you asking me this? You guys don't,
right.
you know. So that's one that'll get them zeroed back in quick.
So I'm curious with the combine, there's a million steps of the pre-draft process. You guys have these all-star games. You have all these different steps. Like, where does the combine rank in terms of importance during this scouting process?
Well, I think it's important, one, because it gives our doctors the chance to get their hands on the guys and put them through the battery of medical tests, and which is very important. You need to know, not necessarily, we know what the injuries were, we need to see the effect of the injuries through the MRIs and the doctor evals, and then there's some injuries we're not familiar with. You know, the schools, the HIPAA laws, and, you know, it's not as accessible as it used to be, and they're not as willing to give us the information at the schools, and it's understandable. So, you know, some kids sign a release and schools are allowed to talk about it. Other schools don't do it to protect themselves. So a lot of this, sometimes it's brand new information. So that's very valuable. Obviously, like I said, the field drills and the, you know, it's a level playing field. And that's why at Indy, they do a great job of encouraging everyone to time and test, because they're not going to be in a situation that's, you know, that can truly replicate what the combine offers.
Like,
to
their
all
pro
players.
Days, I feel like almost have an asterisk next to them.
They
kind of,
yeah, right,
stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you go to some schools and, you know, without naming the schools, there's two SEC schools. I go to one place and I know they're going to run faster than they ran at the combine.
Right.
And I go to the other school and it's like the surface they run on is really soft, and it's like, I don't think the guys are going to run that fast, and they typically don't. So you always hope that the guys from the slow turf
or the guys
run at the combine. No, you hope they run at the combine, because if they don't, you know you're gonna, and you like him, you know he's not gonna, you don't anticipate him posting a good time.
Is it that good though?
If you like him and you know he's fast,
and then they post a slow time, you're like, all right.
It is, but you're everyone else in the room staring at the card where it says 4.62 for a wide receiver.
And you're trying to convince him he's fast.
I'm telling you, he's faster, you know. If he only would have run here, you know.
Right,
you know, it's not easy, you know. And again, like the teams that run outdoors, you know, if it rains the day before, it softens the ground. You just don't know, you know.
Right.
So there it's. The surface is the same for every guy that runs on it. So,
what do you put more emphasis on? A guy who goes through a college career and has a ton of college production, then gets to the combine, it's kind of eh. Or the guy that throughout his college career didn't have great numbers, but then he gets to the combine and he checks all the boxes in terms of height, speed, and he has all the measurables. Like, which one do you value
more?
I'm
taking the football player.
Yeah.
I think the testing certainly alerts you to something that's there in that body. You know, if a guy blows up the combine, there's something there. Now, you watch the film. Okay, is he maybe playing in a different role than you would play him in? You know, I don't want to say the wrong scheme, but if we had him, would we play him the same way? You know, no, we wouldn't. We'd put him in this role, which would take advantage of his athleticism more and allow him to flourish more. Or you see, they're using the way and it's just not computing. And it's just the instincts aren't there. So, to me, if you get a guy that makes a ton of plays in college football, and it's not always the case, you know, some guys just, they peak in college, you know, but they're football players. And, you know, they may not have the ideal measurables. They may be missing this. They may be missing that. But, man, if you turn on the tape and they just keep making plays, that's a football player. And that's what we need to take. You know, those are the types of guys that we really need to take. And the ones that are football players that test great,
even
ones
better
than everyone wants, you know.
Right. Maybe they should go to the Olympics or something.
Exactly.
So, do you feel like the combine has gotten more useful or less useful over the years?
I don't think it's. I think the combine is as useful as you make it. I think we've tried to as an organization, get as much as we can possibly get out of the combine to benefit us. So, you know, I don't think the combine has changed in terms of more useful, less useful. I do think they have, you know, Jeff Foster and the guys that run National, who organize the combine, they've done a great job getting feedback from teams, trying to identify what we want. So, in terms of the accessibility to players, what we need to get done from it from a team and league perspective with the players, while also dealing with the growing media obligations that they have and it being on network TV, and you know, so I think Jeff has done an awesome job with it, allowing us to get what we need done there, and he's also done a great job of involving as many teams that are willing to be involved. And I think this year there are 31 out of 32 teams that actually voted on the players to attend the full list of players that they gave us. And now, you know, I vote on from the Ravens' perspective and other teams vote from their perspective, and he takes that all together and decides on who to invite.
Interesting.
So I think getting feedback and input from the teams has really helped it really truthfully become better. You know, his goal is we want all the guys drafted to come from the combine.
Right.
That's unrealistic, right. But the greater percentage they can, you know, achieve, the better it is.
So if you could send Jeff an email with a proposed change for the combine, he would just accept it instantly. What would you suggest?
Wow, I don't know. I'd have to think about that. because you know, it's such a routine. The Indy
move it out of Indy.
Indy, no.
Somewhere warm.
No. All right, so like that's the last thing I would suggest.
Really?
Absolutely. I would be scared to death if they moved the combine to
Miami,
why? LA, Dallas, Houston for warm weather, because you guys have gone out there. It is such a great network. It's all bunched together. Every hotel is connected to every other one with all the walkways. It's all right there.
Right.
You know, if you put it in LA, I mean, where are you going to work out? How you know, the proximity to the venues.
Right.
You're going to have travel time. I mean, from our hotel to the Lucas Oil Stadium, it takes 10 minutes to walk there.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't take a 30-minute car ride if the traffic's good. You know, so I think Indy is perfect for the combine.
Well, it's like it's always been kind of cool, because when you walk there, it's like you're in line getting your bagel for breakfast, and there's Bill Belichick, and then you walk and you see whatever. There's Mike Tomlin, and just like you see all these different people, the entire scouting community and coaching community is all there in one place.
Town. Right.
It's an NFL convention, and everybody's there.
Absolutely, that's what it is. It's our, you know, it is our convention, really and truthfully. You know, our unofficial convention, and it's really convenient to set up. And Indy the city does a great job hosting it. And it'd be nice to be sitting in Miami. It's not like we're gonna be sitting outside at the beach anyway. We're indoors no matter where we are.
You can't do the interviews. Just say, hey, meet me on the beach.
5 o'clock.
Yeah. We'll do our interview out there.
In between, you know, First and Second Ave. You know, you'll have the rainbow umbrella up and then the Ravens umbrella next to it. You know,
couple Coronas. Right. See if you want better interviews. Couple Coronas.
Exactly. There you go.
If they've graduated.
Right.
So, in all seriousness, what position do you think benefits the most? I mean, I think that, like, there's so much attention probably paid to wide receivers and the times, right? And the times the guys posted the 40-yard dash. But is it as simple to say, okay, the 40-yard dash and the speed positions are going to be the ones that have a chance to benefit the most of the combine?
The guys that can really pop, You know, your running backs, wideouts, DBs, and even linebackers. Your skill positions, the guys that can really roll, they have a chance to show up more. But in terms of positions, I mean, at linemen, they put them through good drills. Offensive linemen, they put them through good drills, and you can really see the athlete that the guy is or the athlete that he isn't, you know. So I really don't know if it favors any position more than the other. You know, quarterbacks get a chance to throw to a bunch of different wideouts, but they're all throwing the same routes, and you know, so... It's a good, like, measuring stick, you know. So I don't know if it benefits anybody. You know, I'd say it's a lot different when you watch a quarterback work out at the combine than when you go to his pro day, because now they're all scripted. They're all run by a quarterback coach. There's 60 to 80 plays. Everything's been rehearsed beforehand. They've gone through it over and over in detail. So it's not as maybe as a raw, here you go, this is what you got to do.
Right.
You know, see how you measure up. even playing field type of situation. So I like watching the quarterbacks to see who handles it the best. Because you go into it saying, hey, you know what? He doesn't know the wide receiver he's throwing to. He's not familiar with how fast he's going to be. So the timing is going to, so you know that. So you want to see how they adjust. Right. So I think it's a great way to watch quarterbacks. But you also have to anticipate or accept that, hey, he drew a bad short straw and has a wide receiver who doesn't run a precise route. You know, so you have to know that, you know, when you're watching.
Right. The other guy's throwing to Julio Jones. Exactly. He's throwing to some stiff.
Right. Julio Jones is giant, you know. Yeah. So if you're off target, you know, it's still going to be caught versus throwing to the 5'9" receiver. Well, you better be pinpointed with him, you know. Yeah.
Do you get, how many days are there of actual drills?
It starts Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, yeah.
Is there any point that you start to get bored watching these drills? Because when I'm watching on TV, I got to tell you, maybe this is why I'm a reporter and not a scout, but I'm like, oh, God, just let this be over. The guys just run around tight. Like, is there any point that you're like, enough is enough?
No, I actually get bored during the second. If I ever get bored during the combine, it's during the second 40s. second run of 40. Right. It's like you just want to get them to the drills. I actually like watching the drills because I try to grade. George Kokinas and I normally sit together. I don't let him leave my side, because we have a few wagers during the 40. So we keep each other company and BS, but watch the workout. When the workouts start, we stop talking. We're zeroed in. So the workouts are actually probably the most excited I am because you get to see, oh wow, that was a good rep, that was a bad rep, the 40s, the first 40 is fun because you're seeing, you're getting engaged for speed. The only time you're excited for the second 40 is if your guy you like runs slow the first time and you're like, or he runs
super fast. I promise he's faster, I'm telling you.
Run fast, bad start, oh did you see him, you know, he stumbled, you know. So, you know, but the second 40 is like, especially in the big groups, it's like, oh my goodness, God, we got 30. They got 30 guys got to run it again. Right. You know, that's, you know, we already saw the times. You know,
So last year, cornerback was like super strong.
Yeah,
you know? And then once the season began and played out, it bore true. A lot of rookie cornerbacks had good years. What position or positions are the cornerback of this year's draft?
I'd say corner's good again.
Really?
Yeah. Cornerback is the cornerback of this year's draft. maybe it's pretty good. I mean, it's good. I would say maybe not as quite as good on the very top end, but it is. It's really good, you know. Okay. And so corner's good. Safety's probably not as deep as it was last year. Not by much, but just not quite as deep. Now the top safeties are up there.
Legit, yeah, right.
So, And then running backs is a good group again. It's funny to see because the game has changed so much at all levels in terms of being much more passing and wide open and spread type offenses. But if you think about the running backs that have come out the past couple of years, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's as wide open as the game has become. I can't remember four consecutive running backs, the top running backs, were just been so impressive. But, you know, with Gurley and then Zeke and then Leonard and now Barkley is everyone's consensus number one. I mean, that's a heck of a run.
Those are all really special players.
It's unbelievable. And then you look at the guys behind them in the same drafts, and they've been very productive. So it's great to see, you know, as much as we've opened up the game at all levels, to see that we're still kicking out some good running backs.
So that's interesting.
What about on the flip side, the weakest position, one that's not maybe as deep as, you know, those other ones you just mentioned?
I'd say just thinking through the board, lineman's good. I would probably say the outside backer, but even that's not bad. You know, it's a good draft to sum it up. It's a good draft in terms of that. Outside backers maybe a little bit thinner than years past.
Yeah.
But not by much, you know. That's a position that is always hard to really fill up tremendously. So,
well, good thing we got two of them last year, though.
Yeah.
Huh?
Right, exactly. We've done a good job stacking some. So.
Right.
So, well, we got to talk about wide receiver. Yeah. You know, that's what...
So there's one position that you figured we were probably going to talk about.
It was wide receiver. You knew we were going to ask you about wide receiver. So let's... I
thought it would be D lineman, honestly.
Yeah, right?
I've really been watching those nose tackles.
So what do you think of the receiver group? Let's start there.
It's a very deep group.
Okay.
I would not say it's a top end AJ Green, Julio. You don't have those types of guys, you know. Right. As you guys, you read what everyone else reads. There's people are saying it's not, and I think that's an accurate assessment. That doesn't mean there's not really good wideouts in the draft, because there are. I believe there are. But in terms of your guys that are going to be a top 10 type of pick, I don't know if that guy exists in this year's draft. But I do know that when you look at the draft, the wide receiver column as a whole, you say, you know what, we got a lot of guys that we can pick from over the course of the draft. So
the guy who probably seems to be as close to that top 10 type player would be Calvin Ridley. I mean, he's just, based on everything we're reading right now, seems to be kind of that consensus number one wide receiver. What are your impressions of him?
A talented player. Yeah. You know, he's very fast. His production has been up and down through his career. You know, part of that's they went to a lot of the RPO stuff the past 2 years. His freshman year, they were more of a pro-style approach to their offense. And then the past 2 years, they've done a lot more RPOs and, you know, quick decisions. So he may not always been the primary read or the secondary read where he's getting the ball. A little undersized guy. You know, he's a little thin in terms of when you look at his body and his frame. But he's certainly very fast, quick-footed, very good route ability, and certainly good hands and production. But again, his production per catch is good. It's just he doesn't have a high volume of, you know, targets in that offense.
Right. How about the Maryland guy, DJ Moore, my guy from Maryland?
Your guy. Yeah. He's a very productive guy, too. Now, he had, I think, I want to say 80-some catches this year. He's been pretty productive through his career.
Yeah.
It's interesting with him because he did it with, I think, four quarterbacks.
Including, like, linebackers quarterback and stuff.
He kept catching the ball, you know. Right. So he's a guy that just knows how to play football, gets open, does a good job. You know, obviously being local, we get a chance to see him, you know, whether we're going down to a game or he's on TV. Every time they play at 12 o'clock, I got to watch Maryland play, and it runs into my Auburn, you know, games on CBS.
Because
they won't kick over until the ACC game is over. So I'm missing the beginning of the big SEC matchup each week. So I've watched him play on TV and, in the fourth quarters a lot. You know? But no, he's a competitive guy. I know DJ well over the years of scouting. And he says absolutely fantastic things about him. As good of a player he is, he's an even better person, which is a great, great, great compliment any player I think could get, and especially from a guy like DJ who I've known a long time, and I know how good of a guy he is and how good of a head coach he is. So carries a lot of weight with me. So, but no, he's very productive, strong hands, and just a good football player.
So with you saying there's not the upper echelon or the premier elite wide receiver like Julio and whatnot, is it too much for fans to think that a rookie wide receiver that we draft this year is going to come in and just instantly turn around the passing game? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's kind of difficult for rookie wide receivers to make that jump and make that instant impact. Cooper Kupp, you know,
there's examples, but then the first Juju, whatever.
They had good years.
But there's been
a lot of first round in recent years, first round guys that have not panned out.
There's no doubt. And if you think about Cooper and Juju, they're two good examples. Their primary roles were slot receivers.
Right.
All right.
Right.
They're not Antonio Brown. Right. They're not Sammy Watkins and the other guy from USC. Robert Woods.
Yeah, Robert Woods.
So Coop had a good chemistry, but a lot, you know, that offense, they did a heck of a job really getting a lot of those guys the ball.
And,
A lot of guys got numbers up there. So, and Coop was definitely better, but what helped Coop be productive this year, he's very smart. He had a lot of experience in the slot, and he catches the ball well, you know. And so, you know, in the games I watched him play, he was the concepts designed him open, and he was able to read coverage. And that's the thing that a lot of rookies, it takes time, and the game's so much faster, and that's why you don't see a lot of instant impact receivers.
Right.
Getting back to your original question, you know, because it takes, if you're not just completely much more physically dominant than your opponent, mm-hmm. you got to learn. You got the intricacies of route running, you know, quick read of coverage, adjusting quickly, you know, and that takes a little bit of time. Not everyone can do that right away. It takes the reps. And so do I think a rookie can come in and help our offense? Absolutely. There's no doubt it can be done, mm-hmm. you know. Would I ever take a rookie, you know, would we ever take a rookie and myself think this guy is going to be a Pro Bowler in year one mm-hmm. as a receiver? And it's really hard to project that. It's really hard to think that you're going to get, unless it's a Julio or A.J. Green.
Right.
And you know those guys, Calvin Johnson, those guys are rare, you know.
Right.
And that's why there's not a lot of them taken at the top 10 picks every year. You know, if you just look at last year's first round, you know, it just
three guys by the first time.
You know, he battled injuries.
Yeah.
A couple of them battled injuries.
Corey
Davis was hurt a lot, and he was a little slow to get going. He finished great in the playoff game, mm-hmm. But he was really didn't do a lot during the course of the year, and a part of his due to injury. And same with Ross in Cincinnati, but. It takes time for those positions. You know, that's a position that takes a little bit of time. And sometimes you get a guy that can adapt and adjust really quick, and it helps him. And hopefully if we get a guy, he's able to do that.
Has there been any lessons learned just from your time of drafting wide receivers here? Have you guys changed the way you scout them at all over that period or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, I think we're always trying to tweak how we scout all positions, in all honesty. Obviously, you know, it's been well documented that we have had – we haven't had as much success at the wide receiver position.
That,
no, but you know, it's out.
Right.
It's a fact. And you know, we take pride as an organization, as scouts and coaches, is trying to, you know, correct the things we're overlooking and or maybe overvaluing or undervaluing and really honing in on those things and pouring more and more effort into it, you know.
Right.
And we watch, I don't know if you can watch more film.
It's not for lack of effort.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah,
so,
do you guys go back? I mean, there's a kind of a self-scouting process. You go back and you say, like, okay, why did it work here and what did we not get here?
Yeah.
Like, you guys go back through.
Self-scouting the scouts?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do it multiple ways. We'll look through the scouts. You know, we'll assess each of our scouts, the strengths, weaknesses, like their strength, their strong positions, their weak positions. These are your three bottom positions. Go back yourself and look and see why you missed on these guys.
Oh, that's interesting. And you do that by, like, looking at the results. Like, do you wait for 3 years to then
it's a historical assessment. It's hard to say, okay, this is last year's draft. You missed this guy because he went in the second round. You had a fifth round grade on him.
Right.
That doesn't make him wrong yet. You know?
Right.
You know, he might be right. Boy, you nailed him. So, or vice versa. You had a second round grade on him. You were too high and he went in the fifth. Well, you know, hey, now the guy's starting and I was right, you know. But no, it's more of their production, their play time. You know, and their pro grades, you know, so we take our pro scouts say, hey, this is what this guy is. And so you take all those things into account. Our analytics group does a great job of helping us, you know, do a lot of self-scouting, you know.
Right.
And then you also look for, as a group, okay, historically at any position, what positions are we overvaluing, undervaluing? You know, what traits are we... does it seem like we're putting too much emphasis on when we put these guys on the board? What traits are we not paying enough attention to? So we're always trying to tweak the process here and there, and the way we and tweak the way we identify players.
Right. So along with wide receiver, another popular first round mock draft pick for the Ravens is the offensive tackle.
Sure.
So you want to talk a little bit about the offensive tackles. I guess overall you kind of said it was a good group, but could you expand on that a little bit? Like how good is this group?
It's really when you look at the tackle board, it's pretty deep. Again, you know, I don't think there's a consensus.
Yeah, it seems like it's all over the place.
Right.
As to who the top, like, four guys
there's
are.
There's probably not a consensus number one tackle.
Right.
There's probably not a consensus of these three or four guys are going to go in the first round. There's probably not a consensus of that.
Right.
What there is a consensus in my mind, or at least in my opinion, is that there's good players. From the whoever goes first to whoever's the seventh or eighth tackle taken.
Mm-hmm.
And so And then there's some of these tackles are versatile where you could say, you know what, I could see this guy going into guard. I could see this guy even playing center. You know, so you have some versatile type tackles that maybe they're not just a left versus right tackle. They also have some guard flexibility and even center flexibility. So it's a good group. I think there's enough players where, you know, we'll be able to, if that's our target, right, you know, and he's the top guy, that we'll have a shot to take one.
The one guy right now who seems to be kind of getting a lot of buzz is Orlando Brown.
Sure.
Kuiper has us taking him
at
16 right now. Obviously, his dad played here. What's your impressions of him? I mean, does he remind you when you watch him? Does he remind you of watching his dad play?
Yeah, he's. It's weird to say this. He's not as big as Zeus, Zeus Sr.
I thought he was an inch
taller.
Right, but honestly.
Like, you think about Zeus. I mean, Zeus filled up two doorways, I felt like, when he walked in. And maybe I'm thinking of Zeus as when I was a 22-year-old kid. And
everyone seemed bigger.
He was screaming at, I won't name the reporter, but yeah. And if he listens to this, he'll probably know it was him. But I'm 22 walking out on the field my first year, and I literally come walking out. Practice is, you know, they're doing warm-ups. And right when I come walking down the ramp at the old facility, which you guys aren't familiar with, but there's this little, just a little turf ramp. Mm-hmm. I'm walking down, and he turns around, and he is MFing me.
You?
But he's not.
You think that, right?
He's looking right at me, and he's like, I'm going to kick. And I'm like, it's funny because I came beep-bopping out, you know, walking, you know, going out to practice, and I swear, my walk slowed down so much. I was just like in slow motion, like, oh my God.
I turn around and I'm like,
who? He's got to be talking to someone behind me. And I see one of the guys just like, you know, some of the reporters talking, and one of them like kind of smiling, like, oh, he's mad at me. You know?
Gotta be Preston, right? Gotta be Preston.
Like I said, I'm not going to name any names, but it was funny because I just, it froze me. So I remember Zeus in that hulking way. Now, fast forward to when little Zeus, or little junior,
little Zeus,
was a freshman. Sorry, the story's long. I walk into Oklahoma, and they were rebuilding their facility. And so they're in trailers, and I don't know where to go in this trailer. So I walk in, and I'm going to try this door, and it's the locker room. And this big sucker comes walking out. And I talk about getting emotional because, you know, Orlando had passed. And,
yeah.
And I've listened on the radio about how he's going to be the starting tackle and on the way to Oklahoma. And so I was really happy for him. And he walked and he flashed me Orlando Senior smile. And I'm like, you're little Zeus. And he's like, and he sees the Ravens. So he's like, yes, sir. And I'm like, man. I was like, you don't know me. I remember you when you were younger. I said, your dad is so proud of you right now.
That's cool.
You know, so he plays like his dad. I mean, he's mean, he's physical.
He MFs reporters?
Yeah, no, he doesn't do that. He's mean, he's physical. He's longer. I think he's longer than his dad, right, not as wide, and probably a better athlete, but that type of physical, rugged, big, strong, beat you up mentality.
That's cool. So we have a fan question, which we usually answer off the top.
Yeah.
But we figured we'd just pose it to you, right? Since it's about offensive tackles. So this one comes from Jarrell Neves, aka Nintendo Gaming. Are you a Nintendo player?
I am not.
You're not a Nintendo guy.
No. My kids are Xboxers. You know?
Oh, okay.
My 6-year-old tells me he's a gamer all the time. You know? I'm a gamer. You know?
Different meaning of the word. When you used to say you're a gamer, it was like for Cal Ripken and stuff.
Right.
Now a gamer is different.
Exactly. There's no doubt.
Anyway, the question is, 3 out of 5 of the early mock drafts have us picking an offensive tackle with the 16th pick. With Nico, Alex, and Yanda coming off an injury and Howard under contract for the next, I think, 1 year, actually, how likely is it that we go lineman at number 16?
You know, I really think it's going to be how the board falls, you know. You know, obviously, there's linemen that are going to be worthy of that pick, and there's other positions that will be as well. I don't think you can ever have enough offensive linemen. And I think this year proved itself. Always keep that unit strong and you're going to have a chance to have a good running game and a good passing game and everything, you know.
Right.
With a shaky offensive line, you're not going to do much of anything, you know. So
right.
To answer your fan question, I'd say I would not be disappointed if we took one.
Yeah.
But if there's a better player at a different position, we're going to take him.
Nice. Good answer. So last year it was four straight defensive guys.
Yes.
Would you be surprised this year if it was four straight offensive?
Because
I wouldn't. Personally.
Yeah, I know you would. The fans wouldn't. I'd be more surprised if it was four straight defensive guys again.
That would surprise me.
You know, I've always said, God, you know, we'll just take defense again in the first round. Pitchforks and torches will be outside
just to watch building, it.
Right? Let's just see what happens. No, you know what? We need help on defense still. You know, and certainly we have needs on offense. I take four in a row ever. That's probably rare.
Right.
So I guess the answer to that question, I'd be more surprised if it happens again on either side. You know, it's just
right.
It's the way the board fell last year, and we knew what was happening. And it's like, this is the guy, you know, let's just take him. And you don't want to force a guy up the board just because you've taken three offensive guys and, well, we got to take a defensive player now. You know, so right. if it happens again, that's because we feel that they're the best pick at that moment.
Right.
But it's rare for that to happen, so I'd be surprised if it happened again.
I have one more serious question before we get to our yuck yuck questions with you to close this thing out. Okay. What, obviously, the big news of the offseason with Eric becoming the general manager next year, you know, it probably doesn't have any bearing on this year. All the scouting, a lot of it's been done or whatnot, and it's just coming down to, I mean, the final stages and then making the pick. But what's your opinion or what's your take on that? I mean, obviously, you've worked with Eric for a long time. This is a big... big news, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's weird. It's different coming from my perspective. One, we've been working together, Eric and I, and myself and Ozzy, for 20 years. This is my 20th year working with both those guys. And it's about stability and consistency and keep moving forward. And it's always been in the plans. And Steve addressed that. This has always been the plan. And Ozzy's known it's been in the plan, you know? So honestly, the way I look at it is, it's an awesome opportunity for Eric, and it's a great, you know, reward for the service and the effort and the ability he has as a manager and a director and an assistant GM and but it's also kind of just a continuation of the process in my mind. And you know, when Eric is running it, I'm sure we'll do things to his. You know,
or have his stamp on it.
Or his, more towards his liking. Mm-hmm. But we all have grown together, and our philosophy has been built through Ozzy's leadership and guidance, and his stamp is always going to be on us and the way we think. And I think about the guys that have gone elsewhere and worked elsewhere, you know, whether it was Phil and George going to Cleveland, you know, Terry McDonough, who's in Arizona now. A lot of the guys carry that with them. Joe D and Andy out in Philly, they carry that with them. And so I think we'll carry, you know, and Ozzy's still going to be here, you know, and involved. And so I think we'll carry forward with our philosophy. And like I said, you know, every guy's going to, you know, if I were ever a GM, I would have my own little, you know, stamp on things. But the foundation's going to stay very true to the Ravens way.
Right. So last week when we had David Blackburn on the podcast, one of the things that he referenced was the infamous Ortiz emails that
we'll
sometimes get. What is it? What does an infamous Ortiz email look like?
The infamous ones are long. all right, so like I try not, a couple things, like I try not to, we ask the guys to do a lot and, you know, our scouts are excellent.
Okay,
I want to go. Our scouts do a tremendous job. All right, we put a lot of stuff on their plates, and you know they've been a little, they've taken a little bit of beating lately, and you know I challenge anyone to sit out there and do what they do and watch them work, and you tell me their heart and soul is not in this organization and trying to make us win. You know, and I dare anyone to spend a day, spend a week with our guys on the road, and I'll be passionate to the end on that.
Yeah. I think so, David exhibited that.
Yeah. And so sometimes I'll send an email out about, hey, guys, this is a project I want us to work on. This is something we're going to tweak this or make sure. And it just kind of, you know, I cover a lot. I don't send a lot of emails out. So when I do send an email, I cover a lot. I don't send an email. I'm like, you know, daily affirmations, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm sending out an email like once every, you know, 3 weeks, you know, about in terms of like directives, you know, or this is the direction we're going to go, or I want us to start looking at this, or So when they get it, it's like, oh boy. So they know when they get
you
it.
You see it coming in your box.
It's home.
Here comes more work. Ortiz is about to dump more work on us, you know. Or we got to add another layer to things.
Right.
And our guys, there's a lot of layers we have them do, you know.
Right.
And I'm telling you, we tweaked how we were going to interview guys. And, you know, it was a process that we were trying to come up with, and we came up with it. And Corey Krawick and I did a lot of research on it, and we dumped it on them a week before the All-Star games. And it was completely different than our guys attacked it. And I mean, attacked it and feel like we gained a lot out of it. And it's just, I'm proud of the way any request I ever give them, any challenge I ever, you know, I or Eric, anything we make of them, they answer, they fight and they battle, and you know, I'll go to my grave knowing how good those guys are. So,
that's cool.
I'm proud of them, and I appreciate all the work they do for me. So I know, and sometimes there's an apology. Guys, sorry for this.
It starts with that.
Yeah.
Whenever you see that from your boss, I'm sorry.
I never apologize for my emails, but it is funny. Like, maybe I don't cover something enough, and I'll get a question. Well, you know, I'll get a follow-up. And when I type it, it's common sense. Like, as I'm typing it, like, it's right there, but you know, because sometimes it gets a little lengthy, they'll, like my stories, they'll miss the part and they'll email me, well, what about this? I'm like, well, as I stated, you know,
right. I figured it was like, hey, I just heard about some prospect in Alaska. Gonna need you to fly up there tomorrow. That's what I figured.
Some of those. Not necessarily Alaska, but, you know, there are. I do, and that's maybe one of the other infamous Ortiz emails, is like, as we're getting closer to, you know, we get done All-Star games, hey, do me a favor, look at this guy. Heard some buzz on this guy, or we dug this guy out in-house, you know. Take a look at them. So, yeah, typically, whenever Ortiz sends an email out, it's work, you know? It's not like, hey, how's the family doing? You know?
Right.
Yeah. So, I do try to talk to the guys during the week, you know? But no, Ortiz email normally requires additional work in some capacity.
So, to end this, to wrap it up, any good stories from the road? You told us your buzzard story, episode 55, for those loyal listeners out there. If you want to go back and listen to it, it's fantastic. Any good stories from the road, anything you can share?
Yeah, I guess.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, it's not really that good. Like, everyone gives me a hard time about Ortiz, you know, and my name has been, it's a unique last name. It's not a common last name. So, it goes from anything from Horitz to Hart to Hordig to Horowitz to...
Who you have pronouncing this name? I don't think it's that hard to figure out.
Ortiz to Ortega to... I mean, I promise. Like, it's just... It gets...
Heavy is the H? Is it...
It's Ortiz.
Ortiz.
We've been saying it wrong for
We've kind of been saying like a salt. Ortiz. Like Ortiz. We kind of gloss over that.
I mean, the H is there. It's pronounced, but, you know...
I didn't know if it was a silent H.
It's not a silent H, but... You know, but like, you know, it's funny, but I've just become accustomed to it. But I thought I heard them all. And I was at Texas this year, and I think the name Horvitz, and I don't know, I think that would be a Jewish name, Horvitz.
Sounds,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I know Horowitz is, and which I've been called many times, but I've never been called Horvitz. And I mentioned Terry McDonough earlier. He was in the building when one of our coaches actually sent a fax to me when I was young, Jose Ortega. So he literally addressed the fax to Jose Ortega. Jesse Markison got it, and she was like, I think this means you, laughing. So this year I'm at in Houston, and the guy was like, okay, Mr. Horvitz. And I'm like, Horvitz? Like, where did the V come from? Like, it's a Horvitz, you know? So that's the best story
that's
I can
great.
Think of, like, where it just made me laugh. So I had to call Terry and, like, here, I got another one for you.
That's
here, I got another name that I've been called. So.
Well, Joe Horvitz, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
Great to have you as always,
absolutely.
Buddy. All right, thanks, Joe.
All right.
Well, good stuff from Joe. Lots of good stuff from Joe. Didn't ask him, you know, we asked Blackburn the question of who he would draft higher. We should have asked Joe.
I asked
Maybe
Joe,
he would have given a direct answer.
I asked Joe on his way down, and he said without a doubt it'd be me. He didn't want to hurt your feelings. He told me not to ask it on there because he felt like he was going to hurt your feelings and didn't want to be rude. So he did tell me it was going to be me.
He did, in all seriousness, once again, say he would only do the podcast if I stood with like in the corner.
Yeah, well, first he said
behind a fake bush.
Yeah, first of all, he said that he wouldn't do the podcast if you were going to be in the room.
Right.
Then I talked him into, okay, Mink can be in the room, but he has to be behind a veil. You know. So we did this whole interview with Mink behind a drape. That's how it works.
Get out of here. Anyway, thank you for listening. We'll be back. We won't be back next week. We're not going to have a pod because, as we mentioned, Garrett will be in Indianapolis for the combine. But as soon as he gets back, I'm talking the day off, Gary. You're going to get off, get your baggage claim, come right in, record the pod. We're going to get your thoughts on everything that happened during the combine, a full breakdown. I'm going to grill you, so you better be taking a lot of notes, big boy.
Oh, I'll have some good stuff ready for you.
All right, so we'll be back with you the week after next. Thanks for listening.